the download from Outkast, hip-hop legend Big Boi, from She and Him, folk musician M. Ward, and another installment of The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. And now, here's your host, a man who refuses to go back to the winter coat, Justin Kaufman.
You can't do it, right? You can't. I saw people today, right now, right outside of Michigan Avenue. I'm seeing fluffy coats with fur collars. No. Sorry. It's late April. I'll freeze. You got it, right? You can't go backwards. You just can't.
I would say you could put on a sock. If you're wearing sandals, put on a sock.
Right. If you're already to the sandal, well, then you've gone too far.
Yeah.
If you're at sandals right now, it's late April. You can't be doing that till June, right? So download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks for joining us tonight. We got a great show for you. Whether you're working, maybe you're getting out of town for the weekend, maybe you're at home doing the routine or watching the Bulls, if they're at halftime right now. It's amazing how fast these games go, right? Just think about it. It starts at 6 o'clock. It's already halftime. We got you back. Thanks for riding shotgun tonight here on the download, 720 WGN. All right, so we got a huge show tonight. Big Boi from Outkast is joining us. How cool is that? I mean, really, Sorry Miss Jackson, Bombs Over Baghdad, Way You Move, Hey Ya, all those songs, Outkast. Big Boi, one of the most prolific, influential hip-hop artist of our generation, is coming to the Mid over in the West Loop at Lake and Halsted for a DJ set tomorrow night. He's going to join us tonight to talk about new music that just dropped this week, but also his life in hip-hop, talk a little bit about what the new music, what we expect from it. So that's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. How great is that? Also tonight, M. Ward. Wow, this is a jam-packed celebrity show. M. Ward, of course, a great American folk singer, but also known for his work in the group She and Him with Zooey Deschanel. And he is a tremendous collaborator. He was in town and for sold-out shows at City Winery, and he is in studio tonight. We're going to talk to him at the big table about his life. I mean, it's tremendous to think about how many projects, musicians, his own projects, other people that he has worked on, he's collaborated with. So we'll talk with M. Ward coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Also, we'll talk Earth Days this weekend. So we'll talk about the oceans. You know, right now you're sipping on that plastic straw at the bottom. And you're like, oh, I'm just going to throw it out. Well, it's probably going to end up in the ocean. So we'll talk about what we need to do to protect our oceans, but what you can do right now. Because it's whenever you hear any of this stuff, especially when it comes to Earth Day, like, what can you do to protect the environment? What can you do at home to help the oceans? We don't live near the oceans. Really think about it. It's not our problem if the plastic from the garbage somehow gets into the ocean. We didn't put it there. But there's some ideas about what we can do, and it all sort of revolves around seafood. Responsibly sourced seafood. We'll talk about that coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour, in honor of Earth Day. And, of course, tonight, Steve Gadlin. So I've got all that great stuff for you tonight, really to sort of, you know, be a hangover cure for what happened last night with the Blackhawks. Steve Gadlin from The Frying Pan, you know, he does once a month with us. He brings an invention. He likes to workshop it here before he brings it to his boss, Mark Cuban. So tonight he will do that, 312-981-7200. You can see what you want. He's been sending me ideas all week. He's been showing me. He actually showed me. He sent me a link on Facebook that was one of his ideas somebody else took, and it is in production. It was Tattoon. I mean, they don't call it Tattoon, but it's the same idea. He had the idea of a singing tattoo.
Yeah.
That you'd put, his with had a minor surgery involved.
Right, minor surgery.
Mm-hmm. But it would like put an implant in your arm, and it'd be like greeting cards where you'd press the button and you'd have a song like on your tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone is doing that with technology. You can tattoo like a sound wave, and then your phone can play that sound wave. Isn't that crazy? So anyway, he's like, hey, I'm not far off. And he's right. So I'm sure he's going to come with some big-time ideas tonight here on the download. The Frying Pan coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Roger Badish tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is the download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break, come back, we'll do the carry out. Stay with us. All right, so download here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a jam-packed show, so let's get at it. Here's the carry out. By the way, a little big boy right here. How about that, huh? Here are today's top stories. Oh, the humanity, the Blackhawks, done for the year. So much promise. And now, so much piling on Twitter. Nashville celebrities Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson burned the Hawks on the old micro-blogging site. Really? I didn't even know the American Idol singers were real. I thought they were Ryan Seacrest robots. Yeah, good to know. Turns out they are to Nashville as Vince Vaughn, Jim Belushi, and Al Pamani are to Chicago. But I will say this, because of Carrie Underwood's social media hate, I will never start listening to her music. Never. The only silver lining from yesterday's sweep, traffic will be lighter now. Oh, that's terrible. Coming up on 100 days of the Trump administration, and now the national argument seems to be, A, did Trump accomplish anything? And B, is Trump the best president that ever lived? Now, the latter question is coming from an unnamed White House source who loves to golf, but you know, it's there. Trump did lash out at the media saying that the 100 days judgment is just the thing they use to criticize. True, or a marker that's been used for decades. It never bodes well when you criticize the way the game is scored. We only lost to Nashville because the game counts goals in the net. What about the ones that hit the goalie, right? It doesn't work that way, Trump. But one thing's certain, Trump is going to make good on his promise to cut the corporate tax rate and lift regulations on corporations that want to set up their headquarters on foreign soil to avoid paying American taxes. Wait, who was asking for that? Wasn't Trump's just in Wisconsin doing his best Grand Funk Railroad impression? We are an American band! American hires! So how does lifting regulations that force corporations to pay more if they leave the country fit into that narrative? Ah, but you know what? Trump's wearing a construction hat, so that's pretty cool. And he's fake driving that big rig! Woohoo! Who cares where the Walgreens headquarters at? Closer to home, Governor Rauner's standing pat on his stance that the state shouldn't pay for abortions. I actually agree. Last thing I want to do is have the door open in the doctor's office, have it be Dr. Madigan walking in. No, he means state insurance plans. He, of course, is being criticized for his flip-flop since he ran as a candidate on a pro-choice platform, in which he responds, yeah, as a person, I'm pro-choice. As a governor, no. I'll give Rauner credit here, because politicians don't vote for their convictions. They vote to stay in office. You think Speaker Madigan cares deeply about workers' comp? No. But he knows that if he defends the system, he could win elections. And that's your political lesson for the day. This Monday, President Obama is scheduled to make his first public appearance after leaving office, and it'll be right here in Chicago. He'll be talking to students about civic engagement. Ooh, boring. I was hoping he'd go all in Chicago, like he'd be a docent on the architecture tour. Now, man, that building right there, the first skyscraper in the modernist style. Now, let's take a look at these gargoyles. Alderman Burke has everyone talking about his textilizer idea. This would be new law that says that if you get in an accident, police can confiscate your phone and plug it into a machine that can tell them exactly what you texted last and when. This could be an issue for privacy, especially if that last text was sensitive information. Or boobs. Either way, sensitive. In weather, sneaky cold today, right? Sneaky. In sports, where do we start? A tough 24 hours for us here in Chicago. First, the Blackhawks get swept out of the Stanley Cup playoffs by the Nashville Predators. Ugh. The pundits all cited the fact that the NHL is a copycat league and teams like the Predators have modeled their squad like the Hawks. High praise, I guess, but it doesn't feel good when we're on the other side of that. The Hawks will have a lot of time this offseason to think about this series and the fact that for the second straight year, they're out in the first round. It's too early to talk contracts and offseason priorities. Remember, the Hawks were the number one team in the West. So tough to talk shakeup when we dominated the regular season, but tough. It stings. There's nothing better than playoff hockey in May, June. And we're just going to have to wait till next year. Oh, this is when you cue up the Elliott Smith music. And get back into my depressing funk. Also, you know what, though? Hard to stay sad because the Cubs did win the World Series like 6 months ago. You know what? We still can be happy for that. And the other big news, Rajon Rondo, the Bulls point guard who only gets up for national games, is going to sit down for national games indefinitely. A fractured thumb. He injured the thumb last game. The Bulls up 2-0 with the series here in Chicago tonight. They're just getting ready for the second half, in which the Boston Celtics lead by 2. But this is a huge blow for a team that was gelling. But then again, Rondo didn't play half the year, so I'm not sure what, you know, the Bulls are just going to fold. But for an 8 seed, the last thing you want is, quote, out indefinitely next to one of your starters on the old stat sheet. So also in this game, Rondo replacement Michael Carter-Williams lost a jump ball to Isaiah Thomas. I think Thomas might be all of 5'1". It's, anyway, instant meme. It's everywhere on the internet. In baseball, big early weekend series for both sides of town. The Cubs take on the upstart Reds in Cincinnati. They're losing as we speak. But the Reds are actually at the top of the NL Central. The Cubs could win the series, take back their rightful first place slot, never look back. Or the Reds could send a message here that they're not a fluke. They're for real. Do the Reds still have Adam Dunn? Who are the Reds? Who's on the Reds? Mario Soto? Is he still on the team? Davey Concepcion still playing shortstop? I don't even know. Who's on the Reds? Joey Votto, I guess, is the only one I can think about. Yeah, whatever. The White Sox welcome the AL champs, the Cleveland Indians. The Indians are turning it around. They're at top of the AL Central, but only a half game over the Sox. So the Sox could be the ones making a statement here, find themselves at the top of the division early in the season. Kluber versus Quintana tonight. Let's see if Jose can turn the season around. He's been pretty bad so far, but he's 7-3 lifetime against the Tribe. Come on, man. You got to pitch well. You know why? Because we need to trade you. It's simple as that. And another baseball news, San Francisco ace Madison Bumgarner out for 6 to 8 weeks after hurting his shoulder in a dirt bike accident. Pitchers, man. Can't you just eat fried chicken and drink Budweiser on your day off like every other starting pitcher? Dirt bikes. Who rides a dirt bike when you've got a ton of money? At least make it a four-wheeler. What a clod. What a clod. Did I mention Madison Bumgarner's on my fantasy team? What a clod. Not anymore. Cut. Got to send a message to these guys. You mess up, you're off Team Kaufman. You know what? I'm sure he's right now. You can see his percentage on ESPN of how much he's owned in fantasy baseball. And he sees it tick down, a little tear in his left eye. That's what you get, buddy. Yesterday, the Bears' regular season schedule came out. The Bears got a tough start. They play on Christmas Eve, though, against the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, that's a risk by the NFL, huh? That's got blackout written all over it. Lots of noon games for the Bears, which is where you're going to see most of the action coming off a 3-13 season. The NFL was like, what, no Jay Cutler? Nah, you don't get national. We need to see pouting. We need to see imploding. Imploding cells. And finally, tonight, tomorrow is Earth Day. Yep. So I'm going to think about what I can do to save the planet when I take my daily 45-minute hot shower and throw away all my old Tupperware. That's the down. That's the carry out for April 21st, 2017. Have a great weekend. Hey, when in doubt, carry out. All right, coming up, we'll talk about responsibly sourced seafood and what we can do to save the oceans in honor of Earth Day this weekend. Also coming up at 8 o'clock, musician M. Ward. And later tonight, Big Boy from Outkast. Woohoo! It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Did you see it?
What did I miss?
Did you see that massive ordnance air blast over the Blackhawks last night?
No.
Came down, it looked a lot like Predators. And then the Moab just blew up, God. And their season was done.
I don't know, man. I had a moment where I'm like, maybe I should just, you know, put into the Apple Music sad music. Like, that's the search. Do like an hour of right. Turn the lights off. I tried my best, just like when a sporting team loses, I skip the post game. I can't handle it, you know. So you're like, I'll catch it. So I missed all the post game. But then the way that ESPN works now is they just do post game for 36 hours after the fact. So this morning I got the whole what went wrong with the Blackhawks kind of thing.
And not to switch gears too dramatically on you, I know you're going to be talking about responsible fishing. Mm-hmm. If this radio thing doesn't work out for you, me, and Pete, maybe we should do a shrimp farm in like Suriname or something like that.
We'll find out how to do it. That's right. My next guest will tell us how to do it the right way, so that's good. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock tonight, great folk musician M. Ward. M. Ward is one half of She and Him, the great duo with Zoe Deschanel. M. Ward, of course, a solo artist as well, as collaborates with so many other artists. We will talk to him about his career. It's tremendous. When doing the research for him, I mean, he either produces, guests, records in studio with, I mean, like 50, 60 different musicians in California. It's crazy. And like all popular stuff that we all know. So we'll talk with M. Ward coming up here on the Download in the 8 o'clock hour. Well, tomorrow's Earth Day, and the city's celebrating all weekend with events that draw attention to the care of the planet. One area that certainly needs our care are the oceans. I mean, they are usually the center of attention in the debate over climate change, as rising temperatures and sea levels are disturbing trends. But it goes beyond just those two hot-button issues. What about garbage? We hear more and more about dead zones stretching hundreds of miles, plastic, or the near destruction of the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. What happens when wildlife habitat disappears? What effect will the end of coral reefs have on us as a planet? And, of course, the food supply. Fishing, or maybe more appropriate for this conversation, overfishing is an issue. So what can we do? Stop drinking out of straws, for one? Well, one thing you personally can do to save the oceans is to think about where and how you buy your seafood. That issue, as well as some of the others, will be discussed this weekend at the Chopping Block at the Merchandise Mart in Loop. It's an event called Blue Goes Green at the Chopping Block, part of a summer-long initiative from the Shedd Aquarium and others. In studio with me tonight, Madeline Caldwell. She's a sustainability specialist at the Shedd Aquarium. And Karen Wallens, the founder of Hooked on Fish. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
All right, so let's talk about this, because I saw the article in the Tribune. I think we all read this idea that this sort of initiative, this Earth Day, is really focusing on plastic straws. Why don't we start there? This concept of something that is really benign to the consumer, something we never think about, that's having an impact on the oceans.
Sure, yeah. So Shedd is celebrating Earth Day this year by asking everyone to shed the straw. And that means just asking to not have a straw in your drink, or just choosing not to have one or use one every day. So just shedding the straw, that's one simple way that you can help keep plastics out of our waterways, out of our oceans, and helping to protect wildlife.
Why? I mean, talk about the impact. What impact is a straw having on the ocean?
So it's estimated that about 500 million straws are used every day in America.
What?
So that's a crazy amount.
That's a crazy amount.
And because it's single-use plastic, they don't biodegrade, and oftentimes they'll just stay in the environment for a very long time, ending up in our waterways. They can break down into little pieces, and wildlife might eat that, ingest it, or get caught in plastics in some way. So definitely an issue, and we want to keep as much plastic out of the environment as possible.
You know, I mean, is that the best way to approach an issue like plastics, especially when you talk about, as you said, like, what is it, short-term or day of plastic use? To sort of focus on the consumer as opposed to the people who are making the straws?
I think it's nice for these nice, simple little takeaways to talk to the consumer. Like, this is something that you can control every day. It's important to collaborate with, you know, organizations and businesses. We're actually working with a lot of restaurants and some other companies in Chicago, asking them to also shed the straw. So we have a handful of restaurants. You can check them out on Shedd Aquarium's website, are participating, and they've agreed to not serve straws, plastic, single-use plastic straws, I should say, on Earth Day.
Really?
And just sharing this messaging with their customers. And if they ask for a straw, providing a compostable or some other alternative for them.
All right. So also let's talk about seafood, because this is an issue as well. It's very interesting. And Karen, I want to bring you in on this, because this is something that, you know, you've with your organization, you've talked about responsible sourcing when it comes to seafood. What does that mean? When I say that, I mean, it seems like a garble of words that I may not understand if I'm listening to this program.
It is kind of a garble of words, but what it means is you need to find out where the fish is from and how it was caught. You know, there are so many ways of catching fish that destroy the environment. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that we are good stewards of the environment.
Just the way that, I mean, when we talk about sustainability, or let's talk about production, because this has been an issue that I assumed was getting better in the way that we have heard so much about it. It's bubbled up in this way of commercial fishing, and the way that you know, I guess the number one thing we think about is the nets that are used for tuna that would catch everything and throw and kill everything but what they needed. And we're finding that that was just depleting certain fish and certain wildlife unnecessarily.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a number of really good stories about, you know, fish that were depleted and now they've come back because of responsible fishing.
If the fish are coming back and we're in a situation where that seems to be working, we're all good. Then why as consumers do I need to worry about what the tilapia is in the grocery store? Because I would assume that this has been fixed in some way just over the fact of awareness and what I've heard over the last couple of years.
I mean, it's a constant process of management and just staying aware and making sure that you're an informed consumer. So I think as a consumer, the best thing you can do is really just ask the questions, you know, like Karen said, where is this from? How is it? Was it caught or farmed using environmentally responsible practices? Because it's constantly changing. I know, you know, we work closely with Seafood Watch. It's Monterey Bay Aquarium's program, and they do assessments. They update those frequently. So because fisheries change, populations change, our environment's constantly changing. So we really need to stay on top of this, you know, as companies, but also just as consumers, anyone who eats seafood.
The Karen Wollins is in studio. She's the founder of Hooked on Fish. Madeline Caldwell is a sustainability specialist at the Shedd Aquarium. The event is called Blue Goes Green at the Chopping Block. It's going to be on Sunday, for Earth Day weekend coming up here. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation about what we can do as consumers when it comes to saving the oceans in honor of Earth Day. Stay with us. This is Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up this weekend in honor of Earth Day on Sunday from 2 to 4, the event Blue Goes Green at the Chopping Block. It's an event that's going to highlight responsibly sourced seafood, all the issues that go along with one of the big problems with keeping the oceans not only secure and clean and all that, but to this idea that we've overfished for so long as human beings, and we continue to do so, and corporations and other fisheries find new ways to sort of skirt the system and deplete, very important natural resources. Karen Wollins is the founder of Hooked on Fish. She's in studio with me, as well as Madeline Caldwell. She's a sustainability specialist at the Shedd Aquarium. They're both part of this event. All right, so, you know, I've read the stories and I know a little bit of the urban myths about, you know, commercial fishing and the concept that what you might be buying in the grocery store may not be what you think it is, whether that be either, you know, it's not salmon, it's not tilapia, or it's they're naming I think tilapia is one of those where it's like, that's not a real fish. They just name it something different. It might not be tilapia. It's one of those. I can't remember which one it is. I read the story, but the idea that, you know, that they're creating new species essentially to sell you bad fish.
Yeah, you're probably thinking of Patagonian toothfish that they renamed as Chilean sea bass.
Yeah, gross.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, anything called a toothfish, I don't know if I want to buy in the...
Right,
in the
right.
But talk about, I mean, these are practices that the commercial fishing industry has done for years, and they continue to do to try and get some mediocre and you know, bad fish into the supermarket.
Yeah, that's definitely something that goes on. There was a study that just came out recently saying that something like 75% of the seafood is mislabeled. So, you know, when you go to your grocery store, you can't always be sure.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, because as you mentioned, Madeline, this idea that you ask questions. I have a lot of respect for my grocery store's, fish counter.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, how are they going to know what they have? And I mean, talk about traceability. Talk about what they know, what they have that's in front of them.
So there's certain information that they should have, knowing the country of origin and the actual species name. So asking those questions first and trying to, you know, really pinpoint, okay, if I know this and this, you can actually use the Seafood Watch app as a great tool. It's a free app that you can download. And if you know a few pieces of information, you can start to figure out, you know, whether or not it's a sustainable option, where it's from. But also just finding someone that you can really trust. I think Hooked on Fish is a really great program because Karen knows a lot about the fish that she sources. And if you really trust the person that you're working with, if you find a fishmonger that you love or a restaurant that you really can trust that has a commitment to sustainability, that's a really great way to go because you're more likely to get something.
Well, this is one of these issues, as I mentioned in the lead, this is one of those issues where you can have an effect on the oceans by trying to make sure that you order the right kind of fish or a fish that was responsibly sourced. There's sort of like a drawback to that will hurt the commercial fishing industry, and they will change their practices if you do this. You know, when I think about being in Chicago, and this has always been, decades ago, the idea was fish came on a Monday, so there was always that sort of idea that you didn't eat fish on a Sunday in a restaurant because they only came once a week or whatever. That's changed. O'Hare Airport and the distributors here have created a massive industry around seafood. So as consumers, I mean, there's a lot that goes on that we don't even know about when it comes to this sort of day-by-day, hour-by-hour sort of seafood highway, if you will, around the not just the country, but the world.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get just about anything you want, you know, if it's in season here in Chicago.
So, I mean, what are some of the things we need to worry about when it comes to, you know, the idea of this being such a global distributor now, and the idea that you can get fish anywhere you want, how you want it? What are some of the things we should watch out for?
One thing that we're concerned about, there are three fish that, you know, people generally love: salmon, tuna, shrimp. So part of our goal is to introduce different kinds of fish to people so that people don't just eat one fish. There are tons of great fish out there that, you know, most of us don't know anything about.
Is that because people like the fish, of course, but it's also what is being sold? I mean, that what gets fished and what gets sold by grocery stores and in the industry.
Right, that is. In fact, there's a good program, I guess you would call it, going on right now. It's called Trash Fish Dinners, though mm-hmm. we all want to change the name. but it also is a way to introduce new kinds of fish, like dogfish.
Mm-hmm. Things that are typically underutilized or maybe considered bycatch, so that's something that is not the actual targeted fish of a fishery. So actually putting that to use and making a market for it so people aren't just putting all of their pressure on just one species and then overfishing it. So that's been a big part of overfishing, is that we have this demand. So I know Atlantic
cod is it's a global industry. And mm-hmm. this is what I can't wrap my head around. It is global. So for people who want to really push a responsible, sustainable sourcing program, you're not just talking about fishermen off the coast of the Atlantic in Massachusetts or big companies off of, you know, the port in Seattle. You're talking about Japanese fishermen, Asian fishermen. I mean, all the continents included. So how do you approach a global epidemic when it comes to overfishing when a lot of people aren't on the same page that it's necessary?
Yeah, that's something that we try to teach people about. I think the more that people say to their fishmongers, you know, I want to know where it's from and how it was caught, maybe then the fishmongers will start listening and the bigger companies then will change their ways.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of collaboration between the industry and, you know, legislative bodies and companies who are buying this fish. They need to work together. And I have seen a lot of that, you know, between certification bodies working with different fisheries and making sure that they are on the same page and that they can meet those standards. There's been a lot of work that's been done, but there's still a ways to go.
The last question I'll ask is just about the process, because there's distributors. We talked about overfishing, and obviously there's been a lot of sort of focus on the idea of the off-fish, or what do you call it, the bycatch. Bycatch.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, questions about the processing. You know, the idea of once the fish is caught and cleaned and prepared for the consumer, what are the safeguards and regulations and the industry practices that go along with that?
Yeah, there have been many stories about how fishes caught here in the U.S., frozen, sent overseas to, say, China for processing, then brought back, and it's, you know, in the meantime, frozen and unfrozen a few times, and then sold as fresh fish here. So, you know, not only is there, you know, fuel usage going back and forth,
but just the idea that this fish shouldn't be frozen, unfrozen, and pushed around the world just
exactly.
for a better processing cost, right?
Right.
Well, it's an interesting concept, and it's something that, so for Earth Day tomorrow, and you guys will be at this event on Sunday, you know, I'm interested. I mean, so if tomorrow I wanted to help the oceans, I should have a piece of fish, but I should ask, what should I ask my fish counter person tomorrow?
Definitely ask where it's from and how it was caught. And if you can find out, too, when was it caught?
What if they say, I don't know?
Well, that is it's likely that might happen.
I'm helping my listeners, right?
Yeah, that's looking true. For anything that might have an indication, like a certification, anything like that. Or, you know, just finding a different place to enjoy that. If you check Shedd Aquarium's website, we have a whole list of restaurants that we work with who are committed to sustainable seafood. But, you know, definitely just asking the question, the fact that someone knows that you care, hopefully eventually that will create some change along the
way.
Well,
it's a big issue, and sustainable seafood is something that's important to our society, especially when it comes to the Earth and Earth Day. Karen Wollens is the founder of Hooked on Fish. Madeline Caldwell is a sustainability specialist at the Shedd Aquarium. The event is called Blue Goes Green at the Chopping Block. It's at the Chopping Block in the Merchandise Mart right here in the Loop on Sunday from 2 to 4. You can find out all the information. Is it on the Shedd website as well?
It is.
It is. There, and you can find it there. Karen, Madeline, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my next guest has his fingerprints all over the modern indie folk scene. Whether it's his own work or collaborations with Zooey Deschanel, Nico Case, or Jim James, M. Ward is as good as it gets. M. Ward is touring on his latest album, More Rain. He just played 2 sold-out shows at City Winery here in town. The singer-songwriter split time between his own solo work and other projects like She and Him or The Monsters of Folk, just to name a couple. M. Ward lives in Portland, Oregon, and he is my guest tonight at the big table. M. Ward, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Great to be here.
You know, I'm interested in your work because I guess where we start, you know, as you tour the show and 2 sold-out shows in Chicago, you actually lived in Chicago for a while. Talk about the homecoming, the idea of coming back to Chicago to play at City Winery.
Yeah, I lived in the Ukrainian district around 2000, 1999, and it always feels great to come back to Chicago. I feel like it changes every day. The street that I lived remains the same,
but that area has to be so different, right?
Yeah. I used to take long walks, and I still do that. That's one of the reasons I love Chicago, is I can take extremely long walks and see the city changing and, you know, sometimes things that, you know, for the better, things for the worse, right? That's
right.
Just life
right,
in every
right.
city. But I love Chicago because, yeah, mainly people, friends, and music.
Well, I mean, for you, I mean, when you were here in Chicago, and it's been, you know, it's 17, 18 years now, but what do you remember about the Chicago music scene? What was it about that scene that helped launch who you are and the music you play today?
I remember being exposed to blues music here, like I had hoped and imagined it being. Where I grew up in Southern California, it was hard to find. So in that way, it was almost like visiting Chicago from another century or something. That's the thing
that's the takeaway. Yeah, it's interesting because being in Southern California, and I know that there's a big folk movement to California, to Los Angeles and Ventura County as well. But talk about what drew you to that kind of music, because when you talk about some of the people you've collaborated with, I mean, you could go in a lot of different directions, whether it be indie rock or rock, or what drew you to folk music? What was it about the music you play that grabbed your attention as a young person?
Probably being a little bit of an introvert, you know, in high school, I wanted to see what I could do strictly on my own with the four track, and that meant acoustic guitar, more acoustic guitar, and more acoustic guitar. And so, as opposed to let's find a big band and make these long collaborations, and so it was, yeah, let's see what I can do on my own.
Were you familiar with folk music and its roots when you were a high school kid doing the four track?
I learned how to play guitar from learning Beatles songs as a gift when I was probably 15. I got a gift of the Beatles songbook from A to Z, and I made it my goal to learn every single song, and it was a great education to music. I never had proper training, but you know, when you learn all those Lennon McCartney songs, I wouldn't say it's easy to write a interesting song, but if those are your ingredients, you're probably going to have at least some interesting chord progressions, and that's when I started learning about chords, which is still my main love.
It's interesting, too, because a lot of your music in the genre of folk, I mean, you've done, it's almost like a history lesson. You know, you can go through different genres that are inside of folk, whether it be Depression era or country Americana. There's a lot that goes into there. As you developed as an artist and started to continue to produce music, did you find yourself gravitating towards different types of folk music, the different genres, and learning more about the music you're playing?
Yeah, I started getting really interested in instrumental guitar, and mainly it was a guitar player named John Fahey who led me down that path, and also Joni Mitchell, and I also got really into this label SST, which had Sonic Youth, and reading about them and the different guitar tunings that they used, that Joni Mitchell used, that John Fahey used, I was a hook, line, and sinker following that path. And it is still the thing that keeps the guitar interesting for me. It keeps it a mystery.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I would love to talk to you about collaboration, also about production. You're billed as a singer-songwriter, but you're as much a producer as you are a singer-songwriter. M. Ward in studio at the Big Table tonight. Our pleasure to have you here. He was just in town doing two sold-out shows at City Winery. We'll talk more with M. Ward here on The Download after the break. Stay with us.
Kingdoms and queens, they all bow down to you. Ranches and ranch hands are bowing too. And I'm taking off my straw hat for you. Singing, here comes the sun again. And the leaves on the trees, they all call out your name. Chrome on the freight line shines the same. And the stars in their cars roll their tops down for you. Singing, here comes the sun again. Oh, but if you're gonna stay, show some mercy today. Blow the breeze on my face.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, musician M. Ward. He just was in town doing two sold-out shows at City Winery. The indie folk artist has collaborated with... I should probably just stop there because I feel like it's who you haven't collaborated with at this point. But let's talk about that. I mean, you have made your name not only with your solo work, and More Rain is what your ninth solo album, but you have collaborated with so many great artists to create new projects and songs and bands and things like that. Where does that spirit come from you? Because, I mean, at the beginning of this interview, you talked about kind of being an introvert and working off the four-track. What is it about collaboration that draws you to it?
I love being in the passenger seat sometimes and seeing how other artists, I'm lucky to have great friends who are great artists, and to be able to just see how they look at music is one of the greatest things about my job is I get to see how people attack problems in the studio, how people attack songwriting. And
so you almost become a student in a way. You're paying attention to what your peers are
forever doing. For all, I will forever be a student of this game.
What kind of collaborator are you?
Well, normally what happens in the studio is the way I look at production is it's cut in two. 50% of a good production is in the pre-programming. It's in the structure of the song. And then the other 50% has to be created in the moment. So it's if you have everything pre-programmed before you're even in the studio, then you end up with a cold sound. And
right.
You're not giving any respect to the musicians that you have in the room with you. So I've tried that, believe me, and I've learned. On the flip side is when you come into the studio with no structure of a song and then you end up having a great time in the studio, but nothing, it just falls apart.
Well, there's a balance between, like you said, what's prepared and what's improvised.
Exactly. And it's taken a long time to figure out how to sort of mine that, but it's one of the greatest parts of what I do.
When you're collaborating with somebody and you're working with another musician, do you have to set that blueprint down, like to say, listen, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to pre-program, then we're going to improvise when we get in, only so they may be comfortable with one way or the other, so it just sort of gets that out of the way?
Yeah, I think most of the artists I've worked with, they are comfortable with that. And it's really the only way I know how to work now. Unless you're working with, you know, a big group of strings, you can't improvise with, you know, 20 right. violins.
Just do 5 minutes, see where it goes.
That ends up being your background.
Right, right.
And then the best vocalists are able to create on the spot. I produced a Mavis Staples record last year and got to witness that firsthand.
Oh, wow.
And that was a great thing to see.
What do you take away from producing a Mavis Staples record? As an artist yourself, M. Ward, like, what do you learn from the experience of being in the studio with someone who is a legend?
Oh, man. It was incredible to watch her work. It was more of an old-fashioned approach, which means relying on her band and the people that she works with in pre-production. That was mainly what I was working with. And then after a few months of pre-production, Mavis comes in for about a week, does everything, and goes. So it was very unusual. Very little contact with her throughout the entire process.
So it's interesting. I mean, different generations of the way that musicians approach their craft or even in some cases different genres, I would assume, you know, people who work with big bands and things like that.
Yeah, it was almost like making how I would imagine working on a Frank Sinatra record or something. It's a lot of teamwork. And then you set the pins up, she comes in and knocks them down. Something I learned from working with Mavis Staples is her approach towards singing. She called the vocal booth her prayer room, and you could tell she's creating a direct line between herself and some kind of a higher power. So it was great to be able to witness that.
M. Ward's my guest. He was just in town doing two sold-out shows at City Winery. His latest album, More Rain, is what he's touring on. You know, when you think about collaboration and you think about the performers and musicians that you want to work with, how does that process work? Is it something where you listen to a record and you hear a Mavis Staples and you're like, oh, I need to find a way to work with Mavis Staples? Or is it more organic in the way that these are relationships that are set up and as a producer you're trying to find them professionally?
I love working with artists who are comfortable with improvising. And the people that you can hear in their music that they're creating on the spot is something that is the most exciting thing for me to work with. A lot of people in the music world have different goals, and that's perfectly fine, but those are the ones I gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. I guess it's more of a jazz approach.
You know, I mean this is probably a hard question to answer, but do you ever have to consider yourself a musician versus producer? I mean, in the way that, I mean, they're obviously hand in hand and they work together. But I mean, you have produced so many records and produced your own work, of course, and collaborated with artists, but you're also a singer-songwriter. Is there one that you identify with more than the other?
The first thing I identify with is the guitar, and that was my first love. And when the guitar is your foundation, that's ends up working its way into all of the above. I do most of my string arrangements and horn arrangements from playing the guitar. That's just the way my brain works. And it's worked out pretty well, I gotta say. I enjoy the process. And if you enjoy the process, you're doing something right.
M. Ward, of course, a great singer-songwriter who just had 2 sold-out shows at City Winery here in town. His latest album is More Rain. We'll continue the conversation after the news here on The Download. Stay with us.
She's a primitive girl. She says it herself. She cuts to the chase. You're like nobody else. If you say how you're doing, she'll say I'm doing well. She's a primitive girl. She says it herself. She's a primitive girl. She don't like to boast. From a natural head to a natural toes. The girl's got a lot of what they call the most. Yes, she's a primitive girl, but she don't like to boast. And I'd like to think I'm a primitive guy. I see the difference between what I want, what I need, and a primitive girl. She don't need me, no, she don't need me.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio tonight at the big table, M. Ward, singer-songwriter. His latest album, More Rain, is out. He just came through Chicago. He did 2 sold-out shows at City Winery. He's in studio tonight. You have so many projects that you worked, whether it be Monsters of Folk or She and Him. You've had success. Is it difficult for you as an artist, as a solo artist, to separate those projects? I think of like your desk having a bin, like this song goes here and this song goes here. How does it work when you're working on so many different projects?
Yeah, the solo records I make for myself are a lot more, I think, inward looking, because I have the time to obsess over these emotions and arrangements. And when I do hear my own songs, it sounds like somebody who's spent a lot of time thinking about these things, for better or for worse. But when I'm able to collaborate with others, I feel it's more of a walk in the park on a sunny day.
Well, I mean, this is a great point. I mean, when you're collaborating with others versus your solo work, how personal can the collaborations be versus your solo work? I mean, your solo work, you're doing songs like Confessions or others where you are actually singing your story, and in a lot of times you're building other fictional narratives as well. But talk about that, the idea of being able to represent yourself on a solo record versus the collaborations.
Yeah, the collaborations, I'm normally, like I said, very, very happily in the passenger seat. And that means not taking over with my vision of the song. I feel like when I'm producing somebody else, I'm mainly interested in their demo. And that's the gold of the song. And if you can listen to the demo enough times, the demo will start to speak to you and tell you where it wants to go. I realize I'm mixing a lot of metaphors right now, but
no, it's interesting.
That demo is priceless, because that's the moment when the writer was creating something out of thin air, and that's the closest the song is ever going to get to its inception, inspiration, and the best improvisation as far as a songwriter goes is that moment when you're making something out of nothing.
When you produce your own work, do you demo?
Always.
Yeah, so you demo to start, then you almost put on your producer hat, even for your own stuff.
Yes, I sit with the demo for months, sometimes years, even if it's just a 4-track or garage band. And if you listen to it enough, it starts to speak to you. Normally it says, put me in the garbage or put me in the recycling bin and then
right.
Let me become something else later. But then every once in a while, maybe one in every 10, 20 songs, they say, let's go into the studio, let's maybe invite some friends who are talented and see what happens.
See what happens.
And those turn into the songs that are on the record.
How often are you writing songs? I mean, obviously for this record, but also when you think of all the collaborations that you produce on, but also do demos for. I mean, is this the kind of 9-to-5 kind of job for you, or is it 24/7? How many songs are you writing, at a given time?
Most of the time it's when you're walking down the street and you have the song in your mind and you're bouncing it around in your brain. the other half is when you do have time to yourself and just playing the guitar. And the writing process never ends. There's always some song, even if it's just a 5 seconds of a song, that, you know, when it something interesting enters your brain, it doesn't really leave until it's done. And it's a habit that I got into when I was 15 of playing guitar every day. And I can't really call it my job or my hobby. It's just life.
And we're talking with M. Ward, the singer-songwriter. Of course, his latest album, More Rain. He's done collaborations. He's in the band She and Him, also Monsters of Folk. Do you believe that the artistic vision, your brain and the way it works around art, could you be able to transfer that to other forms? Could you be a writer? Could you be a novelist? Could you be a theater artist? Or is it just strictly about music?
I've tried to write like short stories, poems, that they always end up turning into songs. I have a great respect for the photographers I work with, for people in films, you know, actors. Great respect for certain journalists even. And I'm very happy to delegate all of these things to others that have a great passion for it. It's division of labor makes the world go round.
You know, for you, 9 albums as a solo artist. When you think back to the original work that you were doing, your first few albums, to what we hear on More Rain, talk about the evolution as a songwriter. I mean, through that time, you've taken time off, you've done collaborations, you've, you know, done several She and Him records, and then you come back to the solo stuff. But talk about that evolution. Do you feel like you have broken through in your own artistic life to evolve as an artist from the first record to the 9th?
I see all of the records as chapters in the same book. I don't see it as when I start recording a new record, I don't say to myself, I'm going to make this crazy left turn just so that people can say, wow, look at that left turn. It's more, I see all the records as sounding by and large the same. And some people might think that's a good thing. Some people might think it's a bad thing. And, you know, maybe I should rattle my cage a little bit more, but it's just...
But you've themed some of the records along the way. I mean, you've gotten into different genres of folk and tried different Americana sounds as you go on.
Yeah, each record does have its own ties, but that always happens after the songs are written. I find, because I'm always writing, there's like 30, 40, 50 songs that have some unifying theme. And so when a few songs get recorded, I sort of explore that idea. And a lot of times it's self-psychotherapy. Is that even a word?
It works. We get it.
finding the things, for example, if you go through your journal writing that you've been writing in since you were 15, there's certain themes that you instinctively...
keep going back to.
Are fascinated by. And that's been a huge part of the record making process for my own records.
What are some of those themes? I mean, for you, what are some of the themes we hear on More Rain that you were all over as a 15-year-old?
Well, when I first started making records, it was my connection to music, which is very hard for me to understand. Why am I doing this for a living? Why did I even pick up the guitar in the first place? Radio, while we're on the radio, it's a good time to talk about the radio. That's how I discovered music, was listening to the radio in Los Angeles. We had all kinds of different stations. Yeah. And so these hours of soaking in music before I even knew what it was had a huge influence. And I think the record I made, Transistor Radio, maybe 10 years ago, was an attempt to recreate that feeling that I had when I was first hearing radio, which is a really abstract thing to try to do. But music is able to express these vague ideas, I think. For this last record, it was collecting songs I've written about, partly dealing with where it is that I live, which is one of the rainiest places in the country, and realizing that I've gravitated towards music as a umbrella, I guess you could say. And there's certain songs that push that idea forward, and I kind of wanted to find a just looking at music as a sanctuary from whatever you're dealing with is an idea that I've continually gone back to. And so this record is a connection to that. I realize I'm speaking in very abstract
no,
terms.
No, I like it. And it makes sense. I mean, the album, it's life. The album is called More Rain. It's a great, great album. M. Ward, our guest tonight, singer-songwriter, just played 2 sold-out shows at City Winery here in Chicago. And, of course, the album More Rain. Matt, great. Thanks for being here, man. Thanks for being my guest at the Big Tail. We really appreciate it.
Nice talking to you.
Well, since time out of mind, I've been lazy. And times before that, I was cruel. And times before that, I was mean, I was mad. Honey, I ain't never had nobody like you. Times before that, well, I was crazy. I saw the dark side of the moon. And the stars in the sky, they never caught my eye. Cause I never had nobody like you.
All right, coming up here on the show, Big Boy from Outkast. Very excited to have him on the program. How cool is that? Last time, Big Boy is one of the, he's the duo Outkast. There's Andre 3000 and Big Boy. They make up Outkast. And the last time Outkast was in town, 2 years ago, I think it was, they headlined Lollapalooza. They were the Saturday night reunion show. I think it was 2015, maybe 2014. Whatever Lollapalooza can fit into Grant Park, 50,000, 75,000, 100,000, whatever it is in that Hutchinson Field, that South Stage.
I think some Blackhawks rallies had 4 million.
Oh, that's right. The Cubs last year, the biggest gathering in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that's where the last time he's in town, he's playing to 100, if not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. So tomorrow night, he's coming to town to play the Mid, which is a great club over on Halstead, Lake and Halstead. But it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what the fits, 300 maybe? I'm not even sure, but he's doing a DJ set, which is interesting because, you know, he's one of the most successful rappers of all time. You would think there'd be a lot of pyrotechnics, costume changes, set pieces, dancing, you know, dancers behind him. But no, it's a DJ set. He comes out with his turntables, plays some Outkast music, mixes it together, raps over it.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, right?
It's great.
And I didn't really recognize this as I'm a naive 42-year-old who has never been to a club like that. But
mm-hmm.
I did not recognize that a lot of stars, celebrities, do this kind of stuff. This is like a good paying gig for them to roll into a club and do a DJ set. Right, as opposed to what they're used to where they play Metro or they mm-hmm. play Vic or Aragon or maybe Grant Park, you know, where that's a huge tour.
Yeah.
This is something where, you know, you look in and you'll see on a random Saturday night in Chicago, whether it's at the Mid or at Studio Paris right here on Hubbard Street, it's like, oh, it's Busta Rhymes.
Right, yeah.
You know, or something where you're like, oh, mm-hmm. I see. They come through and they do it and, you know, they don't necessarily do it like where they're getting a ton of promotion for it because they're paid by the... You know, they're probably paid up front,
mm-hmm.
so they don't really care about promoting it. Like, for instance, I mean, it's interesting because the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, all the, what do you want to do this weekend? 10 things to do this weekend? Nobody mentioned Big Boy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's because it's such a, and they come in as DJs, they're like, it's sort of like a low-profile kind of gig, but it's huge. And it's amazing. That's another thing why I love Chicago. To this way of it's such a big city and the idea that you can bring these artists that are so influential in their industry. Big Boy is, I mean, Sorry Miss Jackson, Bombs Over Baghdad,
yeah,
I mean, he's even, I mean, it's Andre 3000 does Hey Ya, but I mean, that's big, that's
right,
that's
Outkast. I mean, yeah, they're responsible, Outkast, for some of the best songs in music history.
Right. I mean, if you look at the best albums in rap history, Outkast Stankonia is probably 5.
It's up there, yeah.
There's a great in the research, like getting ready for this. I was reading about a story of they just had the 20th anniversary of one of their earliest records, right? And when Outkast were at the Source Awards. Remember when Source Awards used to be like a big thing where you'd be in New York or LA?
Or people were getting fights.
It'd just be brawls. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It'd just be nonstop brawls because of the Suge Knight, Tupac
right.
type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the story at this one, this is a very specific one where they did the best new artist. Source Award gave it. And it was someone from Puff Daddy's record label, someone from Suge Knight's record label, and then this group from the South called Outkast. And they gave the award to Outkast, and the whole arena booed. They wow. booed Outkast because there were these young kids that nobody had heard of from Atlanta. They get up on stage, and Andre 3000 said, hey, the South has got something to say. That's what he said. Shut up. The South has got something to say. And this article was about how if you're a fan of hip-hop in any form, you realize that that was the start of a renaissance period for Atlanta. I mean, you think about the rap names that have come out of that city. T.I. T.I., Young Jeezy. There's a ton of people on the list. I'm not going to go down. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that sort of started because Outkast won that award. It's really interesting to get booed at an award yeah. show. Have some respect.
But obviously they had some foresight yeah. to really get somebody, you know, have somebody that deserved to win.
This was years before Hey Ya. This was years yeah. before even, Sorry, Miss Jackson.
Very similar to when Christopher Cross deservedly won Best New Artist over Elvis Costello.
In
the Grammys.
Just a long way to go. And we ride like the wind. Ride like the wind. It's one of my favorite songs. Ba da 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 da. It's good stuff, man. All right, so coming up, Big Boy. Also tonight, Joe Janes is going to be here, longtime Chicago writer, sketch writer, but also playwright. I mean, I believe he has written more pieces, published more pieces of theater than he has lived days. Like, I think he's somewhere in his 40s, but he is so prolific. I could make an argument he's one of the most prolific writers in town. He's got a new play at Conservatory. We'll talk with him. Also coming up 10 o'clock, Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is one of the most influential voices in hip-hop, and he's coming to Chicago this weekend. I'm talking about the one, the only, Big Boy.
Staying fresh, that's the game plan. Out the oven, because we never microwave, and we break it up like the smile of Michael Strahan, and keep shining like the double Michael J. hand. I do not play, man. Sure, I eat your for sale quick. I'm on that ball strap, let's stay on that toss salad. Old chicken Caesar, begin to follow, when not delete. I used to have a bench full of disease, but didn't need them. But still fill arenas and killing the Coliseum. ATLians stay on top of you human beings. From the mothership, I'm on some other fish. Low key like the blow sold back in 86. But we don't see our dope, we pimp ink pens to provoke the folks and keep them thinking. Where did you drinking? The better yet, do you really know the meaning of life? Or are you sleeping?
Big Boy, of course, is one half of Outkast and a successful solo artist. He's responsible for songs like Two Dope Boys in a Cadillac, Rosa Parks, Bombs Over Baghdad, Miss Jackson, Way You Move, Shutterbug. That's just a sliver of the catalog. And he just dropped two new tracks from his highly anticipated third album, Boomiverse, which is out in June. He's coming to Chicago this weekend for a DJ set at the Mid over at Lake and Halsted in the West Loop, and he is my guest tonight. Big Boy, welcome to the Download. We appreciate it.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing good. So this is a big, this is a big week for you. Thanks for taking some time out, because I know you just dropped two new tracks. Do you still get the same feeling after all these years of dropping new music? Do you still get that same feeling when you release the music and to the world and they're able to consume it?
Absolutely, man. You know, to be, you know, working in the studio for like 3 years, and the whole time you're making the music, you're like, man, I can't wait. I want to let the world hear it. Like, as soon as you complete certain songs, like Kill Jill, I completed that record like maybe a couple years ago. And so I've been working on this album steady ever since I finished the Big Grounds project with Phenogram. Wow. So that's like, you know, one of the most anxious part of being an artist, and it just brings a certain type of excitement. And so, you know, for it to finally, you know, songs to come out and the people receiving the way they've been receiving them, and just, you know, everybody's happy and it's positive energy, man. I love it.
I mean, for you, is that usually the process for you to take this long to put together an album? Because, I mean, I read the stories about your career, and you guys hole up in different studios and you're able to work with Organized Noise other places. And it seems like this is more of a passion project than some of the stuff you've done in the past.
Oh, yeah, man. It's definitely my heart. I'm still, you know, excited about making music and, you know, and touring. That's like my favorite thing is like just performing the songs. Like tonight, I get a chance to perform Mike Jack for the first time live at Club Live in Miami tonight. Wow. And then, you know, I'll be in Chicago tomorrow. It'll be Kill Jill and Mike Jack and doing a host of other songs. So, man, I'm thoroughly excited and happy that the people love the music, man. It just, you know, it just pushes me to make more. And this is the beginning of a lot to come.
You're coming to Chicago tomorrow, and they're billing it as a DJ set at the Mid, which is a smaller club. But, I mean, I think the last time we saw you in Chicago, you and Outkast were, you know, you and Andre were up on stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people at Lollapalooza. I remember seeing you, at Pitchfork. Talk about the difference of what to expect from you at a DJ set as opposed to what people have seen for you in all these different stages.
We started DJing a few years back. You know, we got the Dungeon Family DJs. We started, actually, we had did a Vegas residency at the Wynn. And, you know, it was real fun. And, I mean, you know, it comes from just performing. And so the DJ set is basically me on the turntables along with my DJ Cutmaster Swift and DJ Dog Fader, who's also one-third of Organized Noise, Ray Murray. And we make it an experience, you know what I'm saying? We play unreleased music like, I played Kill Jill maybe 2 years ago at a DJ set I did in Virginia. And so I'd kind of use it as to test out new music and give them an experience. You know, that, like I said before, the catalog is so vast. So along with playing some of today's current hits from other artists, we just like, you know, try to give them that whole big boy experience. You know, some, you know, songs I've been featured on to new music, to music that hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, right.
I get on the microphone and I actually perform from behind the deck. So I might, you know, perform Kill Jill and then I might go into Star Spinning and go into some Migos, you know what I mean? And then break again and I'll go in and I might do Kryptonite or a couple more songs and then go back into some more new music, you know what I'm saying? Some 21 Savage or something, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It's just we just rock the party, man, and we have a lot of fun doing it.
Do you enjoy this? I mean, because I think of a lot of times, you know, you think of club DJs who turn into MCs and you know, sort of that start their career. For you to be a part of Outkast, to be on stage, to be in the big stages like headlining Lollapalooza, to then find a new venture in which you can go in front of a club like this. What are the similarities for you?
It's just, you know, just rocking crowds, you know what I'm saying? The whole thing is about moving people and keeping the party jumping, you know what I mean? We like to have fun and a good time. And I mean, with the DJ set, it's not so serious because you're not just walking back and forth and, you know, kind of just like actually physically performing. But, you know, but when you're behind the decks with the headphones on, I mean, people love that. You know, you break out in the song, their favorite song come on, and I'm sitting there performing it from the DJ booth. So they're getting more bang for their buck, and it's like a two-for-one almost, and we love doing it.
Big Boy's my guest tonight on The Download. He's got just dropped two new tracks from his highly anticipated third album, Boomiverse, which is out in June. Let's talk about Boomiverse real quick. I mean, the tracks are great. Yeah. Like you just mentioned, you're gonna play it tonight in Miami, tomorrow in Chicago. Talk about this collection. You talked about how the you've been in the studio for so long, but what can we expect from? Is the same kind of rapping, making a point kind of music that you've been known for in your career?
It's evolution. You know what I'm saying? Like every album is a time capsule. You know what I'm saying? It captures the time from the listener heard you last. And you know, this record right here is coming after my, you know, the Big Grams release with Fantagram. And, you know, I actually started this record before we did the Big Grams project. And so I took a break from it and then we did Big Grams and I just kept on going along with it. So the music, basically, Boomiverse is like the Big Boom Theory is basically like the Big Bang Theory. You know, everything starts over. You know what I'm saying? This is the origins of some new sound. It's kind of just a shift the culture of what music is right now. You know, I mean, people want something new and refreshing, and we always do that. You know what I'm saying? We come always want to come through with something that you never heard before. With me, it's always expect the unexpected, man. So Boomerverse is basically starting over, and you know, this is another dimension of music. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. it's the Big Boom Theory, baby. We're gonna start it over, and we're gonna tear your head off. Believe that.
I'm amazed because you hit it right on the head. I mean, for you as an artist with Outkast and your solo stuff, I mean, it seems like every time you put out new music, you're forging new territory. You're pioneering in music and hip hop. I mean, do you think about that as an artist? I mean, as Boomerverse, you're putting it together in studio. Are you thinking about it's not ready till I can push it forward?
Yeah, I mean, if it has to be inspiring to me first before I can give it to the people. You know what I'm saying? And it has to be something that, like I said, like I want something. Every song on this album sounds different. No song sounds alike, but they all cohesively ride together cinematically when you turn it on. You know what I'm saying? From the intro to the last song, and you just have it on repeat. And until you get to that point, then you don't put it out. But it's ready to go now, man. And the world has let me know from the response of the two singles right now. Like I'm 98.8% done, and you know, I just shot the video with Adam Levine for Mike Jack 2 days ago in LA, and we're getting ready to shoot the Kill Jill video like week after next. I'll be on Jimmy Fallon on Monday.
Yeah, all right.
So
I saw
it's just
that.
Real busy, man. It's steady, man. And I'm so excited, man. I'm glad the fans dig what I'm doing, man. And what I want everybody to know is that this is this album was slated to be a double CD. It's a sack one and sack two, Daddy Fat Sacks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So this is only sack one, man. I got like 40 records, and all of them are this caliber. So there's no throwaways, no album cuts. It's all killer, no filler. And I'm gonna give it to you every time.
Yeah, we expect nothing less from you. All right, so you know, when you think about, like you just said, you know, the idea of putting the record on repeat, and even talking about CDs, the two CDs, as music in the industry changes. I mean, with streaming and the ability for people to just go to iTunes and sample your music or put shuffle. I mean, it almost forces you to shuffle it. Does that change the way an artist put together a record, put together an album, knowing that people are only going to listen to one or two tracks instead of the whole experience as one?
No, everybody go listen to every last one of these songs I put out because, like I said, each one has its own identity. And, you know, from you listen to Kill Jill and Mike Jack, like, you know, it's 10 more records to go with those records to complete Sack One. So every last one of them is high caliber, elite, street, Jedi rap music. Period.
One more question for you. I, you know, I've always admired your work and even in interviews talking about the idea that, you know, you're conscious when it comes to social issues that are in America at this time. And you talk about sort of rapping to a point as opposed to just, you know, just being an MC who just raps about partying. Talk about that.
Right.
And as your music evolves and you think about you becoming a mature, almost elder statesman for hip hop, do you consider yourself there to be a responsibility for you to continue to do that, to continue to be someone who speaks the truth or talks about social issues in your music?
Oh, absolutely, man. Like like I said, I mean, it's a time capsule of your life of what's happening. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of speak about things that kind of touch me or things I might come across or just, you know, just living everyday life, you know? So, I, you know, of course, you know, we write our own music, we produce our own music. It's to be able to tell the story of how you feeling and, you know, what's happening with you and to touch people's soul and to make thought-provoking songs is just a gift, you know, from God. And, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I just want to share my gift with the world, man, and just continue to make people think. And, you know, it's got to be intelligent. It can get kind of ignorant at times, you know what I'm saying? Because we do get rowdy, but you know,
sure.
it's important to educate that it is to entertain, man. And you just gotta, you know, put it together. Kara's one said it best, edutainment, man. So you kind of sprinkle little tidbits here and there, you know what I'm saying? Not being preachy at all, you know what I'm saying? But you slide in little lines where the listener's like, why'd he say that? What's going on with this? Oh, I feel that way too. So, you know, it's just good, man, to be able to do that and kind of, you know, hit people to situations and make them think about life.
Big Boy, the tremendously influential hip-hop artist, is coming to the Mid tomorrow at Lake and Halsted in the West Loop. He's got a DJ set. Doors open 10 o'clock. I can't thank you enough for taking some time. I know it's a busy time for you, and I know that the album or the tracks dropped this week. Boomerverse, look for it in June. I appreciate it. Big Boy, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Everybody enjoy. I'll see y'all in the Chi-Town tomorrow.
Daddy Pants ain't with three X's. Looking up, pick the X's. No X's on my chest, but all these diamonds got me blessed. Usually I don't do this. Dumb it down, go stupid. Since 17, been counting M's. My bank account's on goofy. They said Cosby gave them Rufus. Now who know what the truth is? What? Chicago full of shooters. My garage is full of hoopers. Got that Southern drawl and all that. My pre-rolls look like ball bags. The South got something to say and all y'all here can't get y'all ball back. If I ain't a hot boy, then what do you call sex? Daddy fat and a jaw never fall back. Like clocks in the wintertime. We stay eating like it's dinner time. Been feasting and cheaping and blowing big, but it ain't no reaper rhyme. We don't know the meaning of drought because we keep it so wet. Why swear not? It's been a while. Just speaking in general. Why there is no formidable opponent or nigga that bone it. Pure uncut, never step on it. Line for line, dope when you want to hit. You want to mind the kind of get hugging the hope when they down and out. Nigga dig a hole so deep, ain't no climbing out.
Yeah, I hear him talking, hear him reckless. I won't even stress. Just kill him softly with my presence.
All right, coming up, Joe Janes, Steve Gadlin with the frying pan. Just heard Big Boy here on WGN Radio. I don't want to speculate, but probably the first time Big Boy's been on WGN. It's my guess. I don't know. I wasn't here for the Outkast years. Stankonia came out in 1999. Could have been on Wally Phillips. Yeah, could have been. I have the same, if you remember, I was fantasizing about Richard Ashcroft, the great singer in The Verve, played at House of Blues, and I was trying to, I had this fantasy of like going, you know, be like, why don't you come backstage? And I'm like, where can we eat dinner? And I'm like, I know where there's great places. And next thing you know, I'm like on tour.
Right.
I have the same fantasy with Big Boy. Like he's like, I just have a feeling at the Mid tomorrow, he'll be spinning and he'll be like, I got to take a break. I had a great interview yesterday. I want to shout out Justin Kaufman.
You going to head out?
I don't think so, but, you know, but maybe I will. Maybe, you know, I mean, show up there,
yeah.
Put on some slacks, you know, no jeans allowed kind of thing.
Oh, it's fancy.
I don't know. I have no idea. No baggy pants. I've seen the news. News always like you can't have baggy pants at the club.
When I was in New Orleans last week, I was told that a lot of the restaurants, you know, are, you know, fancy. You have to wear a sport coat, things like that. And like before I left, I had made some reservations for restaurants. And before I left, I packed or whatever, and then when I got there, I realized I forgot, like, all my nice clothes.
Of course.
Well, like, my sport coat. So I, like, called and said, you know, like, hey, you know, I don't have a sport coat. Is that okay to come in your dining room? And they're like, oh, yeah, we
have
business.
Did you have to wear a loaner?
No. No. Like when you forgot your tie. I forgot my tie in high school. You know, the principal always had, like, an ugly tie for you. So I was like, is there a dressing code in the dining room? And they're like, you know, it's business casual, but, you know, we don't really have any dress code. I'm like, good. And so I was talking to my wife and I was saying, you know, restaurants, you can't have dress codes anymore, you know, in this day and age. There's like fine dining all over the place, you know, chicken wing places are, you know, fine dining. You just can't do it.
Right.
So I go and I'm wearing my pair of slacks and like a button down shirt, kind of just like my work thing.
You look fresh.
And we walk in, it's kind of a nice place. And, you know, there's dudes in flip-flops and shorts and hats on backwards, and I'm, like, so angry. Like, I'm like, there has got to be a dress code. We can't let these bums
no,
in
this
here.
Is just ruining.
I switched up in, like, 30
ruining
seconds.
Society.
Yeah.
With these guys without, look at these guys. No Ugh. Sport coat. No closed toe. Yeah, I don't know what the, I don't know if there's a dress code at the club. But I would be, anyway, what would happen is he'd be like, you know, Justin, is he here? And I'd be like, yeah, I'm in the back. He's like, great interview. And then he'd play like, you know, I don't know, Fresh and So Clean. And then he'd be like, he'd nod, come backstage. And he's like, I'm hungry. And I'm like, I know where the food's at. So we just go over to West Loop, Randolph Street, like Au Cheval, even though there's a 3-hour wait. I walk in and they're like, they recognize me. They go, that's Justin from the Download. I don't know, he's with some other guys. I'm like, no, this is the guy from Outkast. And they're like, well, we know you and your AM radio show. And so I get the number one table, and Big Boy's so impressed. And he's just like, you know what, whenever I come to Chicago, I'm just going to hang out. And then he's like, oh, you're not going to believe this, but they screwed up our hotel. And I'm like, you can stay at my place on the couch. And then Big Boy hangs out. We just hang out all night. And he brings like his little Tascam, you know, MIDI machine.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm working on some beats. And he and I just freestyle to it, and we create a whole record.
Wife could be added to the...
Wife wakes up at 7 o'clock, and she's just like, well, you guys are still up? And I'm like, hold on.
Right? I'm dying for the day when I see Boomiverse come out in June. It says, you know, next track, you know, feat
featuring
Jay
Young
Coffs.
Jeezy, Andre 3000, Jay Coffs. I think that could work. Anyway, Big Boy. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Coming up 10 o'clock hour, Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. 312-981-7200. The local inventor has a great development deal with Mark Cuban after winning on Shark Tank. Before he brings a new idea to Mark Cuban, he workshops it here on the Download. He's got a new one. He's in the building, and we will be workshopping it and giving him constructive criticism coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. 312-981-7200. Well, my next guest is the man behind the new play at the Conservatory called Our Christian Nation. Our Christian Nation is a play that imagines a country run by the extreme Christian right. The two-act satire is written by longtime comedy writer and playwright Joe Janes. Joe's one of Chicago's most prolific writers. Whether it be full three-act plays or his daily sketch project, I think he has more plays and sketches than days lived. Joe Janes, my guest tonight. Joe, great to see you. How you been, man?
Great to see you, Justin. I've been doing really well.
Am I right in that you have more pieces of work, written work, than age, or let's just say 8 years lived?
It could be. I mean, I really haven't measured it out, and now that things are electronic, it's hard to really lay it out to kind of get a visual on it.
Hundreds, though.
Yeah, hundreds.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of, yeah, maybe thousands.
Where does this play come from?
This play comes from me being really angry at the world, and it got started with people trying to tear down the separation of church and state. I mean, that's the basic thing. Mm-hmm. Doing it at the state level and the national level, and women's rights, and revising history so that it looks like we're a Christian nation. I did a lot of research on this, and I found out that Lincoln's a bad guy. Lincoln's considered a bad guy because he wasn't baptized, and the Civil War was a way to punish him, and he might have been a little gay.
Mm.
So God was out for
double trouble.
Yeah, and that the slaves maybe were okay with their situation.
That's really,
they had a job, they had food, they had a place to sleep.
This is what you learned in research?
This is what I learned. This is actually from a Christian homeschooling lesson. And, of course, the slaves weren't slaves. They were workers. So it was really mind-blowing. And
so
also,
the concept of the play is to sort of imagine a world that was almost built by this sort of the Christian homeschooled lesson.
It's like if Idiocracy and The Handmaid's Tale had a baby, got, you know, a drunken, you know, liaison.
Yeah, right.
And this is the child that came out. It is, it's just, it's like, here's where we're going if we don't stop. And, just the whole revising stuff is the thing that drives me crazy. They're revising fairy tales.
Right.
We have a Goldilocks in our show, and, she breaks in to the Three Bears home because she wasn't raised properly in a Christian home. And, spoiler alert, it doesn't end well because of stand your ground, rules.
Joe, as a satirist, as a writer, I mean, does the times we're living in with a new president and everything that's happened in the last 6 months, is it good for writers? Is it bad for writers?
It's horrifying. Because it's interesting because we did this show initially in the summer up in Waukegan, part of a theater festival in Waukegan, and we're doing it now. And before the election, it was a lot funnier. Now it's more horrifying. Hmm. So there's been a little bit of a flip because it's getting a little bit too close to the bone for what we were making fun of. So, you know, it's one of those mixed things. It's like, Yeah, it's a great time to write satire, but at the same time, it's like, I'd rather not have it be a great time to write satire.
Right. Is it harder to write satire in the way that you have to make things, you have to almost to embellish more than you need to sort of have razor sort of thin satire? Because everything that's happening in real time is, you know, you hear that all the time. People are like, this can't be real. This must be a joke. For writers, for comedy writers, you have to almost exaggerate it more than it needs to be.
You have to get ahead of the curve. Yeah, absolutely. Because now it's like anything can come out of Washington or any capital, and you're like, I couldn't even think of that. And
as a comedy writer, as someone who's, like I said, written so many things, Joe Janes in studio, longtime comedy writer here in Chicago. Do you? I always think about this, and I'm glad to have you here. Just we've known each other for years, but. Are there some topics you won't take on? Like, to take on religion, to take on the Christian right? I mean, automatically, you're getting into areas where people don't necessarily all say, oh, that's a good laugh.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, sacrilegious, if you will.
This thing, the play is chock full of horrifying things. And one thing I also discovered is, this is something that I wouldn't normally gravitate towards as a source of humor, is gay conversion therapy. Like, I had thought that would, like, I thought it had just been, like, a thing where a guy did in an office somewhere. But there are hundreds of camps around the country, this country, unregulated, where kids are kidnapped during the night with their parents' grace to go to a camp and get straightened out. And, you know, essentially psychologically and, physically tortured. And, you know, there's nothing funny in that. We try to do that, though.
You know, for you, I mean, you're a well-read dude, right?
I mean,
how much do you have to go into research and really sort of get yourself educated on subjects before you can satirize them?
A lot. There's two documentaries that I checked out for this play, and one I'm sure you probably heard of, Jesus Camp, which was pretty popular.
Yeah.
And then the other one was called Kidnapped for Christ, which is about conversion camps. And that really got the ball rolling for, like, I am so angry about this. I need to distill this and find a way to express this. Like, I'm not a strong physical man, so my only weapon is satire. And I've got to shout.
Good thing you're not. I mean, what would you do? You'd be lifting up cars?
I would be going Hulk right now. It would be crazy.
Well, it's interesting because I wouldn't necessarily think, and I think a lot of young comedy writers, they probably wouldn't necessarily think that there's research that goes into satire or putting together any sort of piece of comedy. But there is. I mean, you just talked about, you're watching two different documentaries for just that joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Christian Nation, there's a lot that goes into this play, not just the gay conversion therapy stuff. So you're for just that sketch, you're watching two documentaries.
Yeah, it helps to be a news junkie, but also like a legitimate news junkie. Like, you're reading valid news sources and not blogs. Right. I mean, it's fine to read opinions, but distinguish them between opinion and fact. It takes a lot of research. Well, it's like John Oliver has fact checkers. You know, they do their research and make sure that it's a joke they're going for, but it's a joke that's grounded in a fact. There's nothing in the play that's not based in quote-unquote truth. You know, what's actually happening out there.
Joe Janes' new play at the Conservatory is called Our Christian Nation. It runs Friday and Saturdays through the 29th of April. Conservatory is at 4210 North Lincoln Avenue. Joe Janes, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more. I really want to get at, I mean, one of the things that you've distinguished yourself as in Chicago as a prolific writer, you write nonstop. I mean, you did the sketch project, the 365 project, where you did a sketch a day for a year. Let's talk about what it takes to that discipline and what it takes to actually produce in that manner beyond just sort of having the idea.
Sure.
We'll do that. Joe Janes, my guest. Stay with us. In studio tonight, Joe Janes, Chicago comedy writer, teacher, longtime actor, director. His new play, Our Christian Nation, is on stage Friday and Saturdays, 8 o'clock through April 29th at the Conservatory.
May 5th. We added a show.
Yeah. There you go, man. Extended. You can put extended on the poster now. 4210 North Lincoln Avenue. They're also planning to go to Edinburgh, the Fringe Festival, this year.
We are. We're going to take this show to Scotland to prove to the rest of the world we're not all crazy here now. is a sane voice.
That's
a few
so
sane
fun,
voices.
Man. We could do. You got to come on after that, so we can just talk about Edinburgh.
Yeah, I'd love
that
to.
Is. I mean, at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, Edinburgh triples in size,
it's
population.
Amazing.
Tons of artists come into town, and they do like month long festival
shows great. From 9 a.m. till after midnight.
Oh, so fun. For you, I mean, and I kind of teased this before the break, you have such a tremendous discipline when it comes to writing. You're constantly writing stuff, whether it be for your own, I don't know if you just stack this stuff away, but also for production and theater here in Chicago through all the different places you've worked. Where does that come from? I mean, because a lot of people, we were just talking to Big Boy in the last hour just about, he spent 3 years on this record. That's coming
out. Oh, wow.
But I mean, just the idea of like, where does it come from, the speed in which you write?
Well, for me, it's an improv background. When it comes to writing, I'm just improvising on paper. You know, I'm just like, but I'm in charge of all the characters, so I don't have to worry about somebody coming in going, hey, I'm a cowboy. That's great. I'm in an operating room. So it's like, you know, I'm just yes-anding myself while I'm sitting down to write. And wherever I start is arbitrary. You know, it's just like when you go see an improviser improvise, they're not like, I would have improvised last night, but I couldn't think of anything to say.
Right.
You know? So just start anywhere. And that's usually what happens. Like, a lot of times when I start a draft of a sketch or what might be a 10-minute play, I might spend the first page shopping around for what the play's about. And then it kicks in, and then I go back and edit. And, you know, it's just
so it's playing. It's more free association kind of writing. Or do you sit down, like with Our Christian Nation, do you sit down saying, I have a point of view. I want to take on a certain point of view.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start writing for
it. Well, yeah, it's a slightly different animal. But ultimately, the approach is akin to it, where I just have to sit down and kind of tap into, like, this is the story and letting it flow and then go back and shaping it. With Our Christian Nation, what happened was Three Brothers Theater in Waukegan was looking for resident playwrights, and I applied, and I pitched them the idea for Our Christian Nation. And they're like, hey, we don't need you as a resident playwright, but we love this idea. Can we do it for a stage reading? And I'm like, sure. This was April. The stage reading was in July. So the real key for my being prolific is deadlines.
Yeah, right.
You know, like if I have a deadline, I get it done. If I'm just like, whatever, it's for me. You know, I've got another play that I've got 20 pages into that I started 3 years ago.
Some don't go
anywhere.
But, you know, let's take back. I kind of mentioned the 365 project a couple years back where you did a sketch a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always wondered about, and there were so many questions about that concept, because as someone who writes on a daily basis for this show or has done comedy before, there's a lot of times where, you know, it's a slog, or it's you're not feeling it that day, and you try to find inspiration. How do you, as a writer, as a creative person, execute a vision like that? The idea of doing something every single day for a year.
Well, again, it was like setting deadlines and also painting myself into a corner. I told a close group of friends that I would email them a sketch before I went to bed, and then if I didn't, they had carte blanche to do whatever a consequence would be for me. And I just never missed a deadline, so I don't know what that consequence ever would have been.
You were that scared of the consequence.
Yeah. So painting myself in a corner. And yeah, there are definitely times where it would be like 11 o'clock at night and I didn't have anything. And I'd be like, all right, here we go. And just start writing. Or I'd look. My favorite technique is to go on iTunes. If you're like me, you have like over 5,000 songs and I don't know most of them. And I would find a title that I wasn't familiar with, but I thought was intriguing, and I would write a sketch for that title. And so that was kind of my go-to backup improv suggestion.
Yeah, I guess for me, and I try to take away some of the lessons from this experience, because for 365 days, you challenge yourself to be creative. So anyone who's listening right now who might be an artist, who might be a writer, or might have just a creative mind, is thinking about how that's part of half, if not more than half, the battle is actually executing the idea that you come up with.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm getting at, like just right there, like just what you're talking about, having improv suggestions in your head or having a group of email like your friends and worried about the consequence. Those are the kind of things you need to do if you want to be prolific like this.
Absolutely. And also it's getting beyond waiting for inspiration. You know, it's doing the work without inspiration. And actually, sometimes getting into the process of writing something can be inspiring. You know, you don't wait for it to happen to you. You go after it.
Right. for you, I mean, you do a lot of work that's commissioned, and you'll also do work that's technical, meaning it, you know, it pays the bills.
Sure.
Is there a different approach to the stuff that, that might not necessarily be from the head of Joe Janes, but it might be something that I've got to write this spot for, you know, for the gas station on the corner, whatever it is. But do you, is there a different process that goes into to the more sort of corporate work?
I find it easier to do that stuff. Like, I find it easier if I know who the actors are that I'm writing for, because I'm familiar with their voice, I'm familiar with their humor. It's much easier for me to write towards them, especially if I get a chance to talk to them and find out what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. So if it's a corporate thing, I'm finding out, well, what are you interested in conveying? And give me some parameters here, because I find it really easy. I find it really easy to be creative when I have parameters. If it's carte blanche, it's easy to flounder,
right?
Because there's nothing to really hang on to.
Right. That's but when you go to iTunes.
Tell me
right.
some things I can't do,
right.
And then I'll fill the voids.
You know, for you, and I think about, you know, the fact that you have been an improviser, you've been a teacher, you've now, you know, writing plays. Is there one area you like more than others? I mean, I've sort of known you for a long time, and I've known you to be a writer. I mean, now I feel like I know you to be, like I said, sort of like a very prolific writer in Chicago. But is there a way that you identify yourself?
I think mostly as a writer. You know, there's nothing that gives me more pleasure than to hear an actor say a line that I wrote on stage and get a big laugh. To me, that's just like, that's the icing on the cake right there.
And for you, I mean, when I think also about that concept, you know, do you... you know, you look back on those days and wonder why there's not more sort of people, I guess, you know, that do written work as opposed to improv in this town. I mean, improv is the huge sort of the go-to, but it seems like it's almost it's such a natural for improvisers to turn into writers and use mm-hmm. the same techniques.
Well, I think the writing program at Second City, I didn't mean this to turn into a plug for the training center, but I teach in the writing program there. And what I noticed from that, from my own experience, is that I became a better improviser from taking writing classes. Mm. And writers become better writers by taking improv classes. So there's definitely a yin-yang thing going on there.
All right, so Our Christian Nation on stage till May 5th. You know, it's going to Edinburgh. Where can people find out about the... Because you guys are going to raise money to go to Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look us up. Our Christian Nation Invades Edinburgh on Indiegogo.com. And anything... would be grateful for helping us out.
Well, you can go see the show Our Christian Nation, which is on stage Fridays and Saturdays, 8 o'clock through May 5th, the Conservatory, 4210 North Lincoln Avenue. Joe Janes is the writer. He's a longtime writer, improviser, director, instructor here in town. Joe, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks, Justin. Had a great time.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN, and it's Friday night, 10 o'clock. It's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Yeah. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. But before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's given us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you, Justin. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you here. Of course, the number 312-981-7200. And, you know, I'm excited because, you know, we moved this segment to a once a month thing. So I feel the anticipation. More people saying, when's Steve going to be back on? I want to hear his next idea. They're
well,
excited.
You know, what I tell you, too, it allows these ideas to really percolate in my mind. And when an idea percolates, you really, you know, it by the time I bring it to you and your listeners, these are refined ideas.
All right.
So it's really useless to criticize them.
Yeah, no, well, we'll see about that. Mm-hmm. Again, 312-981-7200. All right, Steve, why don't you start it off tonight? What is your idea for this week's frying pan?
All right, so here we go. Justin, college season is upon us, college graduation season. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of young men and women will be graduating trying to enter the workforce. Now, one of the things that happens when you go to a job interview is you get that first impression where you get to shake the hand of the person who's interviewing you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I tell you, a lot of the millennials these days just really fail at that initial moment. That first moment to make an impression, that firm handshake is sort of a thing of the past. So what I've invented is a device called a better handshake.
Okay.
Maybe even the better handshake.
Let's call it the better handshake.
Yeah. So it's sort of a metal prosthetic that fits on the outside of your hand. And what you can do is through a knob attached near your shoulder area, you can adjust the pounds per square inch. And then when you go to shake somebody's hand, there's a sensor that can tell you're gripping another human being's hand. And then based on what setting you put it to, it will make sure you squeeze at the appropriate pounds per square inch. So the PSI really goes, you get that nice noise, and it makes sure you give a firm, solid handshake built specifically to whatever specification you turn it, tune it to in the dial. It goes from 0 to 50 pounds per square inch for a handshake.
That's good because there's obviously a lot of issue around sort of the fish-like handshake or
well, yeah. And that first impression is a first impression. You only get one chance to make it, as they say so often in commercials. And what happens here is it gives you the confidence to know you're going to give a scientifically measured firm handshake the first time you meet that interviewer. And this is, I push this for interviews because I know that first handshake is so important. But really, this can be used in any social situation.
Right.
Yeah, it's great. You buy it once, you attach it to your arm. And again, you've got that dial to adjust. And you can shake hands without any fear, without even a second thought.
I have questions, mm-hmm. but as a routine here on the Frying Pan, I let the listeners take the lead. 312-981-7200. The phones are already lighting up here. I like this idea. I do. I think that's something that you've heard more often than not, that people kind of screw up the handshake. They go too long. They go too strong.
Yeah.
They go too limp, which is a huge problem. I mean, it really does sort of can mess up a first impression. So there is something here for that.
And as Ron Popeil, a famous and very successful salesman, used to say, set it and forget it. And that's the same with the better handshake. You set it once using a knob near your shoulder area. How many PSI do you want? You set it. And hey, if that ends up to be too soft or too firm, you can always adjust it for next time. But the idea is you find your perfect handshake pounds per square inch. Set it once. You never have to worry about it again.
All right. Some stuff coming in. 312-981-7200. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break, get everything squared away, and we will start the process of really giving feedback and poking holes in this thing. The better handshake. Tonight's invention idea from Steve Gadlin here on the Frying Pan on the download. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
We will give you beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan, free of charge.
Frying Pan here on the download. 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin, of course, the inventor of IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank. He now has a development deal where he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban. Before he brings those ideas to Mark, he brings them here to the Download Nation to sort of let us poke holes. Tonight, the better handshake. Steve Gadlin.
Yeah, the better handshake is a hand support prosthetic that a metal fitting goes over the outside of your hand. And, of course, it's got a tunable PSI. Actually, it's Bluetooth connected, so you can set that PSI on your phone if the shoulder dial's a little too inconvenient. You can be discreet. But what it does is it delivers a predictable amount of firmness with your handshake. It makes your hand squeeze the hand you're holding. It'll detect you're holding another hand. And then it will compress around your hand to squeeze. Anyway, it gives you the perfect firmness for handshake that you set it and forget it. You never have to worry about a fish floppy handshake again.
Right. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones to start. Let's go with Joe. Joe, yay or nay on the better handshake?
Well, thank you very much. I have a question for Steve before I go yay or nay.
Sure.
I'm curious whether science tells us that there's an optimal PSI for a handshake, and if so, what is that PSI?
That's a great question, Joe. Of course, science does tell us in that science, the science of experimentation tells us. So one thing we've learned is that it's somewhere between 0 and 50 pounds per square inch. Now, we'll tell you, though, the best PSI for some people can actually break bones in other people. So you want to make sure that you are applying the appropriate number. If someone's wiry, a smaller fella or a woman, you'll want to tone that down to maybe 2 to 4 PSI. when you get up to 50 PSI, you're talking about a beefy hand, someone like George the Animal Steel,
a wrestler. Maybe, someone who like has
or
very,
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, like muscular hands.
Muscular, large hands you don't want to break somebody's hand when you shake it. So you can go too soft, you can go too hard, but experimentation will find an answer for you.
Very good. Is there a way I can measure my existing PSI?
Oh, sure. There are plenty of devices. I think if you go to Walgreens and go to the pharmacy, they'll measure your hand PSI.
By the diabetes machine.
Yeah. Right. You can get a flu shot, check your blood sugar, check your hand PSI.
Thank you very much. Yeah, all right. Thank you. Calling.
Thanks, Joe. All right. Let's keep going. Let's go to Terry. Terry, yay or nay on the better handshake?
No, not from the get-go. As I said before, it's part of the process. The handshake is the beginning of the interview and or the end of the interview. And really what encourages its accuracy is, what went on, what's going on in that whole dialogue. So I don't think it's honest. Because it's not a confident handshake, because the confidence is built out of the context of the
So you're saying that it's cheating by having a firmer handshake if you don't really have a firmer handshake.
Yeah, it's you're faking it.
Right. That's a good point, Terry.
Well, I tell you, a real mantra that millennials live by these days is you fake it till you make it. And if you don't have the confidence to deliver a powerful handshake at the beginning or the end of an interview, there's nothing wrong with attaching a shiny metal hand prosthetic, which fits discreetly over your sleeve, and, to deliver a predictable, firm handshake. It's one less variable, let's say. And to say that it's not the most important part of the interview, I disagree, because I've never been able to recover from a sloppy handshake at the top. Hmm. You think about it the entire job interview, and you're really unable to deliver positive answers to questions.
There are a lot of questions I have about the actual apparatus.
Sure.
I'm just giving ideas, because like I said, part of the fun part about the frying pan is that the listeners take the lead. I'm just sort of keeping the trains on time.
Sure.
Running on time. 262. Another great idea, Steve. The
Thanks.
Only one drawback I see is that if you forget to take the device off and you use the men's room, I could see it probably causing serious damage to oneself.
Well, I tell you, you can't forget to take the device off, because the device doesn't come off easily. We actually, we want to put the controls in your shoulder, and we want to keep this thing on your hand. If this thing falls off in the middle of a handshake, well, that's not fun. So it's semi-permanently attached. You do need to return to one of our service centers to have it removed from your arm. This is the kind of thing you're going to wear 24/7.
Oh.
And you know what? That was a funny joke about how it might work in the restroom. But again, remember, you can dial down that PSI all the way to zero that it doesn't do anything.
630 says, definitely needed. I'm an auto repair tech, and between customers and future employees under 30.
Yeah. It's those millennials.
They cannot shake a hand. Yeah. So many big jobs sold with a great handshake. This is from Johnny.
Yeah. And I tell you, let's jump to the receiving end here. I've obviously, in testing this thing, have been on the receiving end of many better handshakes. Boy, they're memorable.
Right.
They're memorable. If that subject looks you straight in the eye and delivers that better handshake to you, there's something so comforting about anywhere from, 20 to 40 PSI of human flesh with metal support squeezing into your hand. Feels good. Mm. Makes you trust a person.
847 says, can I hold a lightsaber with this mechanical hand?
Sure. That's funny. It's not a mechanical hand. It's a mechanical apparatus that sits outside your hand. Right. Sort of becomes a prosthetic addendum. So not so much like Luke Skywalker's mechanical replacement hand. Mm-hmm. It looks similar, but imagine that sitting on the outside of your normal hand.
Right. 630 says, fake it till you make it. That's delusional. Well,
it's worked for a lot of people, and I won't name any presidents. Wink, wink, he'll stay away from politics. But I'm talking, anyway.
630 also says, smells good, but tastes awful. Hmm. I'm not sure what that...
No, we would recommend keeping a better handshake far away from your mouth. So,
oh, really?
It wouldn't taste... Well, yeah, oh, you don't... Yeah. I mean, imagine if you put your hand in your mouth and then you...
I have a question, and again, like I said, I do want to get the listeners in.
Sure.
But, I mean, is this the kind of apparatus that the person you're shaking hands with is going to feel?
Oh, yeah, that's the point, too.
But, I mean, they feel the squeeze, but are they going to feel like, are they shaking hands with a metal apparatus? And they're aren't they going to be distracted by the metal apparatus?
You know what? It's off-putting at first, but it's the type of thing that, I'm guessing if you're someone who shakes hands regularly, mm-hmm. you won't be running into one of these for the first time, except for the first time. There's only one first time. So,
yeah, but,
most of what you're touching is human flesh, okay? And then we put a nice rubberized wrapper around the metal that's matched to your skin tone. We have four different skin tones.
Okay.
And that, when touching, doesn't feel so metal. It feels like rubber covering metal. But you know what? If you feel your fingers now, that's what they feel
feeling
like.
Them right now, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rubber covering metal.
I guess they do. They have this sort of like skin covering mm-hmm. bone.
Metal is a great approximation for bone. So, I'll tell you again, it's new the first time you feel it. But the first time you saw someone on a skateboard, you probably had to do a double take. You don't even blink at it now.
Right. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Mike. Mike, yay or nay on the better handshake?
I got to say nay because, if this thing malfunctions, it's going to squish both hands, your hand and the other guy's hand, and break every bone in your hand and everything. So you got to at least have some kind of safety valve on there so it doesn't go over to maximum PSI,
Yeah, there is a safety valve. It won't go over the PSI that it's set for. So if you set it to 50 PSI, we guarantee with 99.9999% accuracy, you're going to get a 50 pounds per square inch handshake. You still may break bones, but that's a problem with the setting, not with the device. We do have a release valve for emergencies. You twist it in your shoulder, and it releases the compressed air and relaxes your hand. And that actually, again, we never expect you to have to use that.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's see here. Does it, I've got 630 says, have you considered electronic stimuli on the arm to tighten the muscles manually?
It doesn't work the same way. We've done many hours of testing with electronic stimuli. You get short, spurty, it's a whole different type of handshake. This is a firm, solid, mechanical handshake. And I'm telling you, the first time you feel one, it feels good. Makes you trust a guy.
Okay. 630 makes a point, I think the same point that I was trying to make a little bit earlier. Isn't an off-putting handshake an off-putting handshake regardless? So if you're putting the better handshake on to counter the fact that you have an off-putting handshake mm-hmm. and it in itself is off-putting, doesn't that defeat the purpose?
No, I wouldn't call it off-putting. I may have called it off-putting, but I take that back. What I mean is it inspires confidence mm-hmm. and trust in both the person delivering the better handshake and the person receiving it.
All right, let's get one more call in before we go to the news. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on the air. Yay or nay on the better handshake?
Yay, better handshake.
All right.
That's great.
Why do you say that?
My father and my grandfather always taught me if you don't come in with a solid handshake, you're not going to show them what kind of man you are.
That's right.
Wow. All right. Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks for that.
And, I want to say this isn't just for men. This is for women, too. I think men and women need that confidence to deliver a powerful, firm handshake from between 0 and 50 pounds per square inch.
312-981-7200. People on the line, Wally, we got some texts as well that are coming in here. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get the update from Rob and the news, and we'll come back for the second half of the frying pan. Tonight's idea, the better handshake, a way for you to mechanically control the strength of your handshake.
Yeah, the strength and pressure of your handshake.
Firmness of your handshake.
All those things.
Steve Gadlin's in studio, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, coming up, the second half of the frying pan. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We got a lot of texts coming in as well. Steve Gadlin and his newest idea, the better handshake, a mechanical apparatus that you attach to your arm and hand for firmer handshakes.
Mm.
Yeah.
I like that.
I know. I thought that'd be right up your alley, Rob.
Absolutely.
All right, so we'll see. Right now, we ended the segment, the first half, with a yay on the phone saying this is great. This is what I think he said his father and his grandfather said. A firm handshake is a sign of what kind of man you are. So, there seems to be some legs here.
And the thing is, if you can get a consistent handshake,
right. Well, that,
that's really the key right there.
There might be some questions in that, and we'll find out in the second half. Only because, you know, that there's settings and you have to get it right. We'll get to it.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's a download here on 720 WGN, and it's time for the frying pan. Steve Gadlin in studio, an inventor here in Chicago, entrepreneur, innovator, Chicago guy who I want to draw catforyou.com. He won on Shark Tank. Now he has a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings his newest ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to WGN Radio to let us sort of workshop. You know, do a focus group, poke some holes into it.
Well, and to get excited about some
And to get excited
ideas.
About yeah. a new idea. And tonight's idea, the better handshake.
That's right. It is a prosthetic, a mechanical prosthetic that attaches to the outside of your hand, helps you deliver a handshake that is firm and consistent. The same firm, wonderful handshake every single time. It, there's a knob attached to your shoulder that lets you adjust the pounds per square inch of that handshake between 0 and 50 pounds per square inch. And, you know, millennials these days are flopping at job interviews because they can't deliver that great first impression. The better handshake makes sure you go in there confident and helps you give a firm, predictable handshake.
All right, 312-981-7200. What do we think, Download Nation? Let's start with Wally. Wally, what do you think, yay or nay on the better handshake?
You know, I listen to your show, and I hear this guy, and I just think, where in the world is he coming up with these dumb ideas? But I actually think this one may have some applicability.
Okay, all right.
What I'd like to do is see if it's possible to put it to be able to hook it up instead of your hand to your foot, and dial it up to about 200 psi to kick this guy in the butt, because these are the stupidest ideas in the world.
Oh, to kick Steve in the butt. That's great.
Kick Steve in the butt. Absolutely.
Thanks, Wally. That's good. I like that one.
The ability I've seen for any of his any of these crazy ideas.
You know, the joke would be on
that
Wally.
Was strong.
The joke would be on Wally, because if you attach this to your foot and turn it up to 200 psi, you'd crush your own foot and you wouldn't be able to kick me at all. So that's, you know.
I guess that is the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Sorry, Wally.
312-981-7200. I do like Wally's approach on that. That was very creative.
Well, yeah.
All right. 630. And I love this. This is where I feel like Download Nation's really questioning. There's like an existential questioning tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But an altered handshake isn't your handshake. It's fake. So is fake better?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, if we're going to, where do you draw the line then? If you wear high heels to an interview, I'm sorry, that's not your stance. That's not how you walk. That's not your posture. A woman who wears a brassiere, that's not the natural curve of a bosom.
Yeah, no.
You know, a man who wears a hat, oh, I'm sorry, that's not the real shape of your head. So, you know, that to me is silly. If we're going to draw the line there, then you know what? We all have to show up naked to all of our job interviews and just display ourselves as nature intended.
Okay, well,
we all take a little help from technology. We brush our teeth in the morning using something, an invention called a toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not natural.
Okay.
So that's not your real teeth. That's not your real breath. No, it's been augmented by people like me, by people with forward thinking, you know, people who really shoot for the stars and bring great ideas to life. Without entrepreneurs, there'd be no cars or elevators. Did you know that? Those were both invented by entrepreneurs.
That's an interesting point. 312-981-7200. 847, does it carry enough voltage to zap a two-handed grabber into oblivion? If so, I'm in. That's Sue from Glenview. She's a big fan of yours.
Yeah, there's actually, thanks, Sue. This doesn't carry any voltage. This is the type of thing you hand pump before you leave for the day, and that builds up the pressure. So, you know, it's sort of like one of those rockets that you pump, 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 and then you let go and it shoots off into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pump it up ahead of time. No voltage. It just uses the power of that compressed air to deliver that handshake.
Hmm.
So no danger of electrocution with this invention.
Okay.
Not with others. Plenty,
right. 312 says, what if you have to take a whiz when you have the device on?
You could turn the PSI back down to 0. So it will apply.
630 wants to know, does it need oiling?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't need oiling. We have ball bearings built into it to keep all of the joints moving flexibly. So it's not the type of thing you need to break down in oil. Just you need to pump it up every morning, and then once again after lunch, if you plan to use it later in the day. And again, after dinner, if you have any evening handshaking plans, but there's no oiling. And then once a year, we ask you to come back into the service station so we can remove the device from your arm and shoulder and run it through a safety check, and then we reinstall it.
Okay. Now that, yeah, that seemed, that may have sparked the lines that just got a lot,
well, but
a lot more
no
people
oiling.
On it because no they're oiling. Interested in some of the, I think you, there are more questions than okay. answers. Let's go to the line. Let's go to Harold. Harold, yay or nay on the better handshake?
Well, I got a couple questions to ask you, and then I can let you know if I, okay. I yay or nay. Two questions. One is, what if you run into another guy? He's out to impress. You're out to impress, and you both got it dialed all the way up. I mean,
no, that's a great question. And here's the genius of this one. If you picture how you do handshakes, you cross your arm over to the other person's hand. So even if you both have it installed, when you give a handshake, because of the way your arm crosses over, you'll only ever have one of them in use at a time.
You both usually shake with the right hand.
Right, but if you both have it on your right hand, and now imagine you're crossing your hand over to his other hand, to the other side, so they can't both be in use at the same time.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Now, my other question, this is from my wife. She asked me to ask, is it possible to make it vibrate? I think she wants to use it instead of an electric toothbrush, I think.
Ah, I see. Well, you know, we don't have vibration built into it, but one of the things we are working on is making sure that pounce, like the air pressure actually moves your hand up and down in a slow handshaking motion. For people who not only have trouble with the firm grip, but who have trouble with the appropriate handshaking motions once that grip is in place.
All right. Well, thank you for that. All right. Let's keep going. Thanks. Let's go to Philip. Philip, what do you think? Yay or nay on the better handshake?
Nay on that idea.
Okay.
Do you remember the old school, like walking the boardwalk carnival thing, the strength tester?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Describe it to him. I forget his name.
Steve.
Steve. Yeah.
Steve. Describe that to him, and actually put a hand. This will be used at home. Put a hand connection there. Make it a proper handshake. Have it programmed with different handshakes, and when I use it. It will be this sensation of a handshake.
Yeah, but that's not a real hand. That's an entirely mechanical hand. We're talking about a way to supplement and augment the natural hand for a natural handshake. Okay.
Well, there are prosthetics out there to make it feel more of a natural hand.
Yeah, you know, but this isn't a prosthetic. We want to feel flesh on flesh. I want to feel nice, fleshy, soft skin rubbing up against nice, fleshy, soft skin.
I'm trying to throw you a bone here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get you something to actually sell to this guy.
Well, I think, you know, I'm not trying to sell to Justin here. I'm trying to workshop an idea to the American public so that I can confidently take it to Mark Cuban. Yeah, to make a sale there.
I wasn't saying that to sell it to Justin. No.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
Because the device isn't actually for sale yet.
Once you get all the feeling and all the things proper,
yeah,
the thing will light up red, green, or yellow. Mm-hmm. Once you hit green, you have matched that handshake to that handshake.
Right, so I see what you're saying. You want some visual indicator on there, and that's a great idea that I had actually thought of earlier. Something that I just forgot to mention.
Really?
Yeah, but it's as you're shaking hands, when the appropriate pressure is applied, there'll be a light up system, red, green, and yellow, to help show you when that handshake is appropriate. So, that is one of my
ideas. You thought of that?
Yes.
Really?
Right.
All right. Thanks, Philip.
Wow. Probably before
All
you
right.
did.
Yep.
All right, let's go to Brian. Brian, yay or nay on the better handshake?
This would be a nay.
Oh, okay. That's it? That's.
Nope.
I think we're losing him there. Okay. I think he got his point across, though.
It was a fuzzy connection, and it may have been a yay.
Maybe, yeah. Let's go to Patrick. Patrick, yay or nay? How you doing? Yay or nay on the better handshake?
Okay, I'm not going to go completely nay, but as I'm listening, I'm wondering, have you ever considered the possible rehab uses for this using it to enhance your strength for, you know, handshakes? What about someone who has carpal tunnel syndrome,
yeah,
you know, called determined tenosynovitis, any type of nerve injury to the hands, because it sounds like you're using electric stimuli to stimulate the muscles and the nerves.
No, there's no electric stimuli. This is purely mechanical. We use a high pressure compression system to help, you know, squeeze your hand together. So, you know, we this is the type of thing, you know, our use case is you're going in, you have a situation where you need to shake a lot of hands, like you're a millennium fresh out of school, you're going on a lot of job interviews. Mm-hmm. But of course, as with all great inventions, other people can think of other ways to apply them. I bet you didn't know the Post-it note was originally invented as a wartime bandage.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but people found out it worked good in offices. So, you know, again, that's entirely possible. I don't know too much about carpal tunnel, but I do know, you know, you throw a great invention out there and people are going to find great ways to use it.
All right. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and we'll wrap up this week's Frying Pan, The Better Handshake. Steve Gadlin in studio. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
All right. To wrap up the frying pan this week, Steve Gadlin in studio for his April presentation of the frying pan.
Sure.
The better handshake is this week's idea. Real quick, as we finish up here tonight, one last elevator pitch for the better handshake.
Yeah, so the better handshake is a metal prosthetic that attaches to the outside of your hand, up your wrist, and is embedded just below the skin of your shoulder. And it allows you to deliver a firm and predictable handshake by using a PSI dial between 0 and 50 pounds per square inch to deliver an amazing, firm, and consistent handshake so you can make a great first impression.
All right. 312-981-7200. All right, let's keep going here. 630 says, does it override the nerves of the hand? The thumb, index, and middle finger are controlled by one nerve cluster, the ring finger and pinky by another.
You know, we don't get into much nerve stuff. Frankly, that's a little bit over my head. But no, we don't tap into the nervous system. We actually squeeze your hand using a mechanical prosthetic to help you deliver that firm handshake.
Okay.
It's very mechanical.
708, if you could come up with a mechanical device that would make millennials do their laundry, you might have a big winner.
That's great. You know, there is a mechanical device. It's called the washing machine. And then there's a psychological device called nagging. So if you combine those, you know, maybe we will, actually. Let me write this down.
773, is this Bluetooth compatible?
Yeah, it is. You know, I had mentioned this earlier. It is Bluetooth compatible. You can set the PSI using your smartphone. So if someone approaches you to shake your hand, you gauge their size with your eyes. Maybe it's a petite lady. Maybe it's a big, heavy man. You say, pardon me. You pull out your phone, open up our app, adjust the pounds per square inch.
Well, you can do that from the app. Yeah,
using a slider. Put your phone away, you reach out and you shake that hand and you make a killer first impression.
Yeah. 630 puts, this is a good question. Did he say, did you say under the skin of the shoulder?
Yeah. So this is embedded, you know, this is the type of thing you don't want to fall off. So what you do when you purchase one, you know, if there's a question about pricing, this is $600 to purchase the device and $1,500 for installation. And for that installation, we actually put a drill on the top. So it's into part of your shoulder bone to keep this thing very firm. And then we attach the knob and that protrudes from your skin. So you could turn that knob with your left hand and adjust the PSI. And then the, you know, same thing. We have a similar way to embed the other piece around your hand by drilling into two of your fingers just to maintain support.
All right. 312.
I'll tell you, that sounds expensive to you. I know that's, I just threw $2,100 in expenses at you plus $40 a month for the Bluetooth service and then another $600 every year for a tune-up. But I tell you, those numbers are nothing compared to a job salary. This is the type of thing that pays for itself probably 20 times over with your first job offer.
All right. Let's go to 630 and get to some of the more colorful stuff. There's a lot of 847 says next.
Okay.
There's an 847 says no.
Okay.
There's another, there's 708 says next. Mm-hmm. So I think they're saying next, like this is not a good idea. 630
well,
says,
or I want to be the next person to test this.
Possibly,
thing.
Yeah. 630 says, the sad part is that he sees nothing wrong.
Well, listen, I see a lot wrong in a lot of other people's ideas. Mm-hmm. But one of the great hallmarks of a great inventor is the confidence in their own ideas mm-hmm. to really push them forward. You know, that's how I sold my stick figure catcher and company to billionaire Mark Cuban. And I bring that same confidence to every other good idea that I have, especially
well,
this
that,
one.
That this next 847 mentions that, mm-hmm. Says, this is such a dumb, pointless invention. You should stick to drawing cats.
That's interesting. Now, you know, if Einstein stuck to whatever he did right before he invented relativity, mm-hmm. well, then we wouldn't have relativity. So, you know, I've got to keep moving forward onto the next thing.
630 says, so you'll drill into the shoulder, but you'll disregard the nerves.
Yeah, I don't think we have nerves in our shoulder bone. Nerves are like, you know, that's part of your spine and your brain.
Right. Okay, and 847 says, please tell this idiot that it's millennial, not millennium.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. I'm talking about millenniums, the generation of, you know, arrogant generation of I hesitate to call them kids because they're getting a little older. You know, the gimme generation, millenniums.
Right.
He's talking about the spaceship from Star Trek, the Millennial Falcon.
All right, let's go to George to end the segment. George, yay or nay on the better handshake?
Well, I like a good handshake.
That's great, George.
And like I said before, the bricklayers, you know, they used to lay 1,000 bricks a day. And every one of them that I know had a tremendous handshake. Now, they were hardworking people, honest people, you know, whatever you want to say. And they were... And I think that goes with it. And I worked hard, and I got a good handshake. And whenever I got to make a deal with somebody, or yeah, if they got a good handshake,
yeah,
it's a little bit of a trust. I don't know if it's just in your mind or if it's there.
Right,
Definitely makes you trust a person.
Well, thanks, George. Thank you for that. He makes a good point, and it seems like he doesn't necessarily care about the.
Well, no, I think we're ending on a
yay.
And
the nerves and the PSI and all the other things.
No,
and
there's
the
a guy
cost
who knows the value of a good handshake.
He's just solely talking about the handshake,
yeah.
The better handshake.
Yes,
Steve Gadlin. I think you know it's not a bad concept. I think that there were a lot of questions right at the end of this segment, especially when you start talking about invasive surgery.
Mm-hmm. Minorly invasive.
Minorly.
Surgery. Barely
but,
invasive.
And the yearly cost. Mm-hmm. But I think that you had...
for itself.
I think that, as we just heard from George, the idea of improving upon a handshake is something that society needs, so I think it's a winner in that regard.
That's great. I'll take it.
There you go. Steve Gadlin, great to see you.
It's
the
good to see you
inventor, innovator, and entrepreneur, the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, and, of course, the weekly segment here, The Frying Pan. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Gadlin. That's going to do it for the download tonight. That was a good frying pan. Strong stuff from Steve Gadlin, the better handshake.
You Justin, know, I apologize, but are there other body parts that he might be able to develop this technology for?
He said that he could. He was. He said he came up with that idea already, and it's in production, so...
Nice.
I think so. I mean, there were a lot of text in sort of asking about very specific body parts, and I skipped all that stuff because it is, you
probably
know,
a good move.
Radio. But, yeah, there were some questions about the foot. One caller called in about the foot, and Steve's answer was if you had the PSI too high, you would crush the foot. So he was still working that part out. So... All right, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Everybody have a great weekend. Patty Vasquez up next tonight. We will be back on Monday night. The owners and chefs of Fat Rice will be in studio. Abe Conlon, Adrian Lowe. Exciting to talk with them. They're up for a James Beard Award. James Beard Awards are coming up in a week and a half here in Chicago. So we'll talk with them coming up Monday night here on the download. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.